Welcome to episode 114 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis, here with Sean Sears. How are you doing?
Doing good. I'm happy to be back. Happy to have you back on the pod, and we're finally putting one of these out.
Yeah, we both kind of missed yesterday, so to give the listener a peek behind the curtain, I was in St. Louis doing essentially pinch hitting for Tony Andracki at NBC Sports Chicago, doing the beat reporter thing, and the game on Sunday night started at an hour and 20 minutes late, so I wasn't leaving the ballpark until 12:30 in the morning, and I had to drive home after that, and I live in central Illinois, so I stopped and got some food and had to get gas. And by the time I was actually getting into my bed, it was 3 a.m. So I'm a little embarrassed about how late I slept in yesterday. I woke up, my wife like got everything ready and took my daughter where she was going. And like my dog curled up in my bed with me. And I very naturally like woke up on my own and stretched and turned and looked at my phone, and it said it was 12:06.
Yeah, I did about the same thing. I had to do something in the morning with my girlfriend, and then so we went and did that, and then I came home, slept for like 3 hours, and then realized I had to go to work. So as you were texting me being like, hey, did you do a podcast yesterday? I was running into my office for work to make sure I wasn't late.
Yeah, no, that's I'm sure people are listening to this like on their lunch breaks or their morning breaks, like shaking their fist at us talking about sleeping till noon. But
yeah, right.
Yeah, hard stuff we have going on.
It's a rough life, man, you know. Yeah.
All right. Well, the series that I witnessed, the Cubs lost 2 of 3, but a lot of things happened. Now they're sneaking up on the deadline, which is today in a few hours. A lot of mm-hmm. news, a lot of rumors, a lot of people spoke while I was down there. Sunday night, Kyle Hendricks, he had a rough start in the first inning, was giving up some hard contact, but he ended up going 7 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, no walks, struck out 8. He retired his last 17 batters in a row. He threw 107 pitches in those 7 innings. After the game, Madden even said, and both Madden and Hendricks said after the game, he could have gone back out there for the 8th inning. And Hendricks even said he kind of wanted to, but he understood why Madden pulled him and thought it was the smart thing to do. But Madden was like, yeah, he could have gone back out there, because at that point, when you're rolling like that, it's just easy. And the pitch count at that point doesn't matter as much as kind of what both of them said, which I agree with. But anyway, Anthony Rizzo and Javi Baez both hit home runs. The Cubs won. Tonight's game in Pittsburgh features John Lester versus Jameson Taillon at 6:05 p.m. Central Time. Taillon has a 5.06 ERA in 5 career starts against the Cubs, while Lester has a 4.74 ERA in 24 2/3 innings over his last 5 starts against the Pirates, going back to last July. He had struggled a bit recently, but was absolutely excellent in his last start against the Diamondbacks. So, Kyle Hendricks, let's talk about him first. I did a piece for NBC Sports while I was there on Hendricks, where I had talked to him about some of his recent stuff. He had mechanical issues. It was about his positioning over the rubber. He said he wasn't getting as much strength in his backside when he was going into, you know, his pitching motion. I had talked to somebody, a scout, who had said they thought that he had something wrong with his like his stride and his landing spot, like it was varying. Oh, really? And I asked him about that. He didn't confirm or deny. So I'm guessing maybe that he knew that was part of it, but really the root cause was the positioning over the rubber. Because I can see if he's not getting as much strength in his backside, you know, when he's going into his pitching motion, that could affect his stride and his where he lands. So he said that the real root of the problem was that, and he said that he had it figured out. And he said the last couple games where he racked up a pitch count was just all about having a specific game plan going in and not executing properly and not adjusting properly. He said that he was confident he was going to be fine going forward. And then last night it was vintage Kyle Hendricks, or Sunday night vintage Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Like you talked about it, and you've talked about it a few times you've been able to chat with Hendricks. He just seems very intuitive about where, you know, the issues lie in his, you know, whether whether it's his mechanics, whether it's his location, whether it's, you know, the pitches he's throwing, where he's throwing them. He seems to know what the issues are at all times, and he's just constantly making those adjustments. I just think that's really impressive. But, yeah, I mean, Kyle looked great. And we've kind of seen now he's kind of traded good starts or bad starts, but this start was very encouraging. This was easily one of his best starts of the season so far. And if we can get Kyle Hendricks, if we can just capture this performance in a bottle and extend it over 2.5-3 months into the postseason, oh my gosh, that would be fantastic. That's exactly what this rotation needs right now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the, you know, Jose Quintana, like having the one out of every four starts where he looks like he did in St. Louis, where he's just nibbling and you know, can't find the zone, like, and then those other three starts he's just like fine, where it's like six innings, 105 pitches, two earned runs, like that's fine. If you get that out of him at this point, I think that's okay. What you really need is you need Lester to continue to be good. You need Hendricks to be Kyle Hendricks, like every time out. You need to eventually get Darvish back. And you need Cole Hamels to be first half of the season Cole Hamels, not last five starts Cole Hamels.
Yes. Yeah, that's really the key. If Lester and Hendricks can bring some stability to the rest of this rotation and the other guys can kind of just, you know, be 3, 4, and 5s, that's huge. That's all you're really asking for at this point. I mean, like we talked about, you know, when the Cubs were trying to acquire a pitcher or whatever with this Cole Hamels deal and all this, I mean, the idea is just to eat these innings. They can just get quality starts, 5, 6 innings, get these bullpen guys just 3 innings at most. That's huge. And that's going to save them long-term-wise, longevity-wise, just exactly what you need. And on top of that, I mean, these pitchers, just we need them to get confident and feel comfortable coming into the postseason. And, you know, if they keep having trading good starts for bad starts and we have Lester, you know, looking like a guy that, you know, he did in his last start, or then looks like the guy that he did when he got lit up by the Cardinals. It's like, ugh. But, you know, getting Lester and Hendricks at the top of this rotation, you know, being the stability guys that this rotation needs, I think kind of evens out the rest of it, like you were talking about.
Yeah, and we can talk a little bit more about Yu Darvish because I mentioned him. Mm-hmm. First thing, on Friday in St. Louis, he spoke to the media. He talked about his bullpen session. This has kind of been talked up, I think, in the last few days. But yeah, he said he threw 23 pitches. The first few, he was having some pain in his elbow. They made an adjustment mechanically. They saw something that he was doing essentially wrong. We can say doing wrong. I think that's the right way to say it. And he switched. He said when he made the switch, it was getting back to the way his arm action was back in spring training.
Yeah.
And he said when he made that switch, pain was gone. He felt much better. He threw the rest of his pitches. And then afterwards, he felt so good, he decided to even play catch. So that's where it was. He said he probably would be doing another bullpen session at some point going forward, but that's kind of up to him at this point.
Right.
And so we don't know when that's going to be, I don't think. And then on Sunday night, I guess A-Rod said some things. We should get this out there. Something that I know, and I'm pretty sure you know as well, not everything A-Rod said was incorrect. I think there's some things that fans are upset about that he said that are actually true. But then there are other things that fans are upset about that he said that he was wrong to put out there on the national broadcast. I think he was pretty wrong to approach a lot of it on the national broadcast, but
I
feel like it's important to get at the things that we know are true, which is the Cubs have essentially let Darvish take control of his rehab because they're, I don't want to say afraid of him, but they don't want to clash with him. And I think there's a lot of feeling within the organization that when they pushed him earlier to get him into a rehab start, there was some pushback from him that he felt like he wasn't ready. And so the Cubs have kind of gotten to this point where they're just like, fine. You know,
like, cool.
If you're not going to listen to us and what we want, then you kind of take control of your rehab. And, you know, if you're going to throw a bullpen session, you're going to throw a bullpen session. We're not going to say, okay, tomorrow you're doing a sim game, or okay, your bullpen session was great on Friday. All right, on Monday, you're going to go do a sim game. They're not doing that with him right now. And so when A-Rod was talking about that, absolutely correct. And I don't think he's wrong. when he says there are probably some people in the clubhouse who don't like that. I haven't been told that from anybody, but I can tell you on Sunday, I saw A-Rod in the clubhouse. He was talking to people. So it wouldn't totally shock me if somebody told him that.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt too. I mean, like A-Rod is, I mean, he is a dude that likes the spotlight, of course. But he's also, I mean, since he's been, I mean, he had that really interesting breakdown with like, what was it, like Pete Rose and Frank Thomas. When it was like, it was MLB Network or something like that. He's been, honestly, I've been impressed with him as a broadcaster, surprisingly, for ESPN. I don't think he would make something up just because I mean, clearly he'd just get blasted. And he knew, like, no matter what he said here, talking about Yu Darvish and saying the Cubs don't like him was going to, you know, draw eyes on him regardless. But, yeah, I mean, there's probably more truth to this than people want to acknowledge. And of course the Cubs are going to shoot it down right away because, you know, what, there's no good coming from like, yeah, we're annoyed with him, you know, like nothing positive comes from that. But yeah, I think you're right. There's some truth to this. I don't think it's as big of a deal as maybe Rodriguez's comments made it seem like, but I'm sure there's plenty of people that's annoyed. I was just thinking about that. Like myself, if I'm like a guy like Brian Dunson, who's, you know, like, struggling and trying to get back to where he needs to be, or even like Tyler Chatwood, like they were talking about Chatwood specifically in that soundbite, you know, how he's going out there and, you know, he's getting his butt handed to him essentially in a lot of these starts, but still going out and grinding and, you know, accepting of this long reliever role now that he's going to be, I think he's available today as a reliever, isn't he?
Yeah. Today's the first day he's available.
So, I mean, like, you know, I can see why the Cubs would be more receptive to a guy like Chatwood as opposed to Darvish, who's kind of, you know, just taking this on his own and being like, well, I guess I'll come back when I feel like it. So I could see, I mean, if I were a Cub and in that locker room, I'd be a little annoyed with that, but I'd also think like, well, hey, when this guy's on, you know, he might be arguably a best pitcher. So.
Yeah. And there's a difference between an injury and a mechanical problem. I think that's a really important distinction that A-Rod didn't make, which is part of why it was on the whole thing was unfair. And, you know, with Chatwood, unless he's, you know, covering something up or lying to us or not telling the team, he's not injured. You know, he even talked about it on Saturday after the demotion to the bullpen.
Right.
He's like, I've been trying to fix the problem, and it's hard to fix a mechanical issue of this nature when you have to still go out there every 5 days and start. And you have to do, I mean, I know the average fan knows that they do all these things, but you have your, you know, your bullpen session and you have like all the different planning you do and, you know, meetings and like, there's a lot that goes into it that these guys are doing those other 4 days that, you know, he can't just be out there figuring out how to change his mechanics. And that's not something, even once you figure it out, it takes repetition and going out there and having to get out big league hitters during that period when you're trying to change your mechanics, I can imagine why that's not easy. And he even said, he's like, that's practically impossible to make that kind of change and get back to what makes you successful when you're trying to go out there every 5 days to get big league hitters out. So for that reason, he actually was fairly positive about going to the bullpen. And he felt like it was a good move for him. He said, basically, I don't like having to go to the pen, but I know that it's the right thing for the team and it's the right thing for me to get right. So for him, it's a mechanical thing. With Darvish, it's an elbow impingement. And I can imagine why a guy who's had Tommy John surgery would want to say, hey, I'm not going to go back out there until it's pain-free and I can actually be myself. Because if he goes back out there and pitches through pain, who knows what happens to his elbow? And you don't want to have a guy in the first year of his contract saying, okay, well, he returned in June and pitched through it, but in August, you know, he has to have Tommy John surgery for a second time. That's not something anybody wants.
No, and you talk about too, like the Cubs just invested $126 million in this guy, and he's telling you he knows his body and it's not feeling right. He's going out there and not feeling comfortable throwing. You listen to him. It's kind of what my thought process would be. Like, you know, we just made massive investment in this guy. He needs to be effective for us, not only this year, but in the upcoming years. If he gets Tommy John surgery at 31 years old, you know, it's Mark Pryor, it's Kerry Wood all over again for the Cubs. So, yeah, you take it easy and you listen to this guy. And I can see why it might get a little annoying and frustrating. But, you know, what's more frustrating is Yu Darvish spending the majority of his Cubs tenure on the DL.
Right. And I feel like a big part of this is the fact that there are these different kind of factions of groups in the locker room, and like we talked about this before, the players kind of, and this is for every team, they kind of shift into their little cliques. And it's not that anybody, I mean, I'm sure some people specifically like other people, but it's not like, you know, the Latin players hate the American born players or anything like that. It's just that they, you know, players get more comfortable around people that, you know, speak their same native language and have, you know, similar, you know, stories growing up, that kind of thing. Darvish is the only Japanese player in there, and he does speak English, although it's not as, you know, not all that well. He does speak it, but, you know, when he talks to the media, he needs his translator to make sure he's saying what he's saying correctly. I think that the language barrier and him being a little bit on an island in that clubhouse makes this whole thing even worse, because he hasn't had the opportunity to build that rapport with the rest of the team.
Right.
And these guys, I mean, fair or not, it's they look at him a little more skeptically because he hasn't built that cachet within the clubhouse. And you know, obviously that, you know, I don't feel like that should be that should matter when judging a guy who's trying to make sure he doesn't tear his, you know, UCL again. But
yeah,
I feel like that does play a factor in that, you know, Tyler Chatwood has probably been embraced a little bit more socially than Darvish has in the clubhouse.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another great thing that Cole Hamels is on this roster, at least he gives Darvish, you know, someone he's got a rapport with. He spent, you know, 2.5 seasons with him there in Texas, or 1.5, 2, something like that. So I mean, like, that's huge. He's got a big fan. He's got a friend in Cole. He was excited when he was coming to the Cubs. He posted on Instagram saying, "I can't wait to see you." You know, so I'm sure that's huge. And we saw, I think it was on Sunday Night Baseball, when they were cutting to Darvish a couple times and they were talking about him with Rodriguez. He was right next to Cole Hamels. So, I mean, I'm sure that was huge to have someone he knows, he's clearly a friend with, and a guy that, you know, could probably sympathize with him a little bit of what the struggles are right now being hurt. That's big.
Yeah. And this is totally anecdotal because I'm not there every day.
Right.
And even the times that I have been there, like earlier in the season, Darvish wasn't there those times, but I saw him there all weekend, and totally anecdotal, the only player I saw him interact with at any point was Cole Hamels.
Yeah.
So, I saw him speaking to his translator quite a bit. I saw him kind of hanging out at his locker, but the only player I saw him like actually like interact with was Hamels. And like I said, that's not me making a statement about, oh, Darvish never talks to anybody, but that's just like, you know, what you said is true. I think he has that relationship with Cole Hamels. That's good. That'll be, that this trade will be good for him. To have another kind of advocate for him in the locker room. Hamels seems to like him quite a bit. They were texting with each other after the trade, and Darvish was excited about it. Hamels was excited to be there with him. And yeah, I feel like this is good for Darvish as well as the Cubs.
Mm-hmm. Let's think about it for a second, though. I think the Rangers like rotation that they were expecting to have like 3 years ago is now currently on the Cubs. So that, like, I mean, good for them, but also it sucks for the Rangers.
Yeah, one of the comments on one of the stories that I wrote about the Cubs and their pitching for NBC Sports was that the Cubs have put together the best rotation of 2013.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. This rotation was in 2013. The Cubs are like, oh my God, like national starlet, as if they aren't already with this crazy rotation.
And I had to laugh because, I mean, yeah, I mean, what would you have said even in 2016, after the 2016 season ended, let's say, you know, they're sweeping up the confetti in Grant Park, and, you know, you travel back in time to tell yourself that in the 2018 season, the Cubs would still have Lester and Hendricks, but they would have added Quintana, Darvish, and Hamels. you'd be like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, superstar team. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately it hasn't worked that way. I didn't take a picture of it because you can't, but I did find it really interesting in the locker room. It's as the jerseys hang, it was Quintana, then Darvish, then Hamels, all there together. And I was like, wow, you know, what a three starting pitchers to acquire when for the all the time we talked about, you know, Hendricks and Lester were the only guys under contract beyond 2017 beyond 2017 that you would need to get three more pitchers. Those are the three pitchers they've added at this point. I mean, Chatwood too, but those are your three guys in the rotation now. It's just, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, good work by the Cubs. Just, you know, unfortunately a bummer that it's not panning out the way they're hoping for.
Right. Well, we can wrap on Darvish and go to our second segment. The trade deadline, as we said, is today, and hopefully the Cubs have one more move in them. We can talk a little bit about what the rumors are. So after the Hamels trade, Theo Epstein came out and spoke to the media, as he does, and he got asked specifically if he was looking to make another deal or if he was set with his roster the way it is now. And I don't remember who asked that question, but whoever asked it knew exactly the answer they were going to get. They just needed it in a quote. And the answer they got was what they expected. He's always listening on more trade offers. He's always looking to improve the roster. He talked about making that move for a starter early because he feels like they could use relief help too, but it's much harder to get a starter in August on waivers than it is to get a reliever. And so he thought, you know, if they need another reliever, it's something they could do after today as well. Yeah, I feel like that's really important. So if they don't trade for another reliever today, it doesn't mean they don't have another one coming at some point. There's a really important point is that Trevor Cahill was really important for the Cubs and made the postseason roster in 2015, and he didn't pitch for them until September that year. So things can still change even after today. But Ken Rosenthal said that the Cubs are still on the market for another starter. Theo talked a little bit about looking into the market for like the high-end starting pitchers, but he said that the market is just thin on that and it just really wasn't working out. I'm sure they are in the market for a starter. I feel like there's like that tweet, the way he said it was true, but was more misleading than anything else.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think everyone took that and ran with it as a story where it's like, oh, well, you know, the available best starting pitchers are Chris Archer and Jacob DeGrom. That means the Cubs must be trying to acquire them. And it's like, sure, I'm sure they've talked to these teams, but like, come on, people. Like, they haven't acquired Jacob DeGrom yet for a reason. Like, if they really, really wanted to get these guys, they could put together a package. They're just not putting the guys in that other teams want. So it's just, you know, well, I guess we're not going to, this isn't going to happen, you know?
Right. And, you know, if Theo Epstein felt like it was something that could happen, I feel like he would have addressed it a little bit differently. He talked about it in a way that was kind of like, you know, it would have been nice to put together a trade for like a high-end starting pitcher, but it's just not something that seems like it could be worked out at this point, at least right now. So I'm sure they're still listening on those calls and they're still making those calls, trying to put something together for something great. It's just, I don't see it happening. It's such a long shot.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly how Rosenthal described it as. I wrote a story on it yesterday, just kind of like wrapping up like who those guys might be for the Cubs, you know, or what they're talking about. And, you know, like Rosenthal mentioned Ian Happ in that conversation. I'm assuming Addison Russell would probably be someone that would probably be included in one of these deals, if not Happ or whatnot. But it just seems unlikely. I mean, I don't think the Cubs are jumping at the bit to really trade it from the 25-man roster, especially when you look at this team and kind of realize that the only reason they're really doing so well right now is their depth, just because the pitching hasn't been great. Rizzo and Bryant have been inconsistent. Your best hitters, Javi Baez and Jason Hayward, who are having great seasons, but, you know, aren't your, you know, typical franchise guys that you're expecting to be carrying this team offensively right now.
Right. And there's also the point of you just acquired Cole Hamels. And it's not that he's a top of the rotation starter anymore. He's probably more like a number three at best, but you have Hamels, you have Lester, you have Hendricks, you have Quintana. And then beyond that, right now you have Montgomery. You should have Yu Darvish at some point this season. You also have Chatwood, who has been told that once he figures out his problems, he's heading back to the rotation, whether that's true or not.
Yeah.
You only have so much space on your roster. I guess the way I see it is if you do, in theory, make that move for one of those guys like Archer or DeGrom, you have to move one of those guys off the roster, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're going to really like look at Montgomery and be like, all right, you're Brian Dunsing now. Be better than Brian Dunsing. You know, like, right. I mean, even then, like, it's too many arms that are going to be accustomed to, like you said, like 5-6 innings now. I don't know. I know there's the worry that Montgomery is going to pitch like 160 plus innings. He's at like, what, like 115, 116, something like that. He's on pace to bust Go past 130 right now.
Actually, it's not that bad. I think
is it really?
I think after his last start, he's at 87. So,
oh wow! So I over exaggerated a lot there.
But,
so I mean,
but yeah,
still though.
In what I wrote, where they had talked about how they were concerned about his innings, and what I wrote, I said, you know, he passed that. He hit 87 pitches or 87 innings on what, like July 28th or something like that. He didn't get there until August 6th last year, and last year he pitched 130 innings, which was his career high. So, obviously, he's on pace to go past his career high, and last year he kind of burned out towards the end. But when they left him in the rotation, we went and talked to him again on Saturday, and he was kind of like, last year I kind of got hurt, and that's why I started to kind of trail off at the end. He said that that long flight from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles, where they had to stop off in Texas.
Oh yeah, he said, Quintana, right?
Yeah,
he said that was different one.
Yeah, it was Quintana's wife. But yeah, he said that after he got off that flight, he had a really sore back, and then said that that's not like uncommon for pitchers or players to deal with that after the long flights that they deal with all the time. But he said that it didn't go away after that, and so that's what he was dealing with when he was really struggling in the postseason. So. He said that he actually had that same issue earlier this year, but leading into the All-Star break, he said those last few starts before that, he basically was not going through his normal routine. He wasn't doing like his bullpen sessions. He was just going out there and starting because he was dealing with a sore back then too. And he said that he was having some issues where like he was getting hit a little harder and walking guys. But he said that after the All-Star break, he feels much better. So that's something that I think people should know about Montgomery in his recent performance. Even though he got knocked around by the Cardinals, he said he felt great. So that's just kind of like how baseball works sometimes. But I think the major point here is somebody's got to go if you trade for another starter, because at that point you don't have enough space for Chatwood / Montgomery, Darvish, Lester, Hendricks, Quintana, Hamels, and whoever else you acquire. How do you set a 4-man playoff rotation if everybody starts pitching well?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Then, you know, best case scenario, I guess there. But yeah, I don't know. Of course, the Cubs are going to listen for a guy like Chris Archer or Jacob DeGrom if that's still an option. But I mean, you know, this late the trade deadline, like, there's just no way. So,
I saw somebody tweeted earlier that there's like 5 teams left in on Archer, and none of them were the Cubs, and that's not in any way surprising.
Yeah, it sounds like the Padres are making the biggest push for him, which, I mean, I guess makes sense kind of, but also it doesn't. Quickly, some of the guys that we were talking about reliever-wise that the Cubs have been linked to, the one that we heard late last night was like Brad Ziegler. What are your thoughts on Ziegler?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Brad Ziegler. I think he has like a 4 ERA this year.
Yeah, he's not that impressive.
When you talk about how the Cubs have kind of abused their arms in the bullpen, Ziegler leads the National League in games appeared so far this year. He's been in 53 games, so about half of the Marlins games. He actually appeared in 53 all of last season for the Marlins and threw 40. He threw 47 innings last year. He's thrown 52 already this year. He doesn't strike people out. He doesn't walk a ton, but he also doesn't low amount of strikeouts he gets, he walks like way more than you would expect for the kind of success he's had. Walks about 3 guys per 9. He strikes out about 6 guys per 9. He's got a 4.58 FIP, 1.269 WHIP. I mean, just not impressive. He's 38 years old. He doesn't throw hard. He makes $9 million this year. So you're taking on probably like $4 million of that if you trade for him. I'm not a fan. If they're going to make a deal with the Marlins, I would prefer it be Kyle Bearclaw.
Yeah, I would too. First off, just because great name. Second of all,
excellent name.
Yeah, it's great, right? Second of all, I mean, like, Brad Ziegler is literally like, you put it on the ground or it's gone. Like, he's got a 74% ground ball rate, but he's got a 31.8 home run fly ball rate. That is ridiculous. His FIP is like literally 60 points higher than his ERA. If he gets on the ground, great. But I mean, you know, he doesn't do anything but miss. He doesn't do literally anything but induce soft contact or give up home runs. Beyond that, I don't know. Like, that doesn't give me Brian Dunsing. Like, I would much rather keep Brian Dunsing and just hope he works through it than look at Brad Ziegler and be like, all right, man, you're 38 years old. Fix this and be good. No.
Yeah. If you're going to trade for anybody, Kyle Bearclaw is 28 years old. This is his fourth year in the big leagues. 2.80 ERA in 209 career innings. 2.54 ERA this year. 10 strikeouts per nine. Career is 11.6. He walks a little bit more than you would like, but his career hits per nine is 5.9. And this year it's 5.1. So he doesn't give up that many base runners. He doesn't get hit hard. He's given up 12 total home runs in his career, which is not much.
That's great.
This is a guy who strikes out a ton of batters. In 2016, he struck out 113 batters in 72 innings. I mean, this is the guy you want if you're making a trade for anybody. And obviously, it's going to cost you a pretty penny if you do trade for him because he has three more years of team control. The Marlins would be motivated to move him because they're cheap and he's about to hit arbitration. But, I mean, come on. This is the guy you want.
Yeah, no, 100%. That was I wrote up Bearclaw a couple days ago just about his fit. And, you know, even if, like, the Cubs do acquire him and they do have to pay for him, whatever, like, you know, him as an option as, you know, potential maybe, like, pseudo closer for Morrow the next year or two, like, that's great. I wouldn't mind seeing Bearclaw there. I mean, he's coming off. He was National League Reliever of the Year – or of the month, excuse me, in June. Took over the closer role for Ziegler. He's got, I think, 10 or 11 saves on the season. He's got filthy stuff. His issue is control sometimes, but, I mean, his walk rate's lowered each year. He's slowly kind of figuring it out more and more. And, I mean, he's clearly been effective since June. So, yeah, that's the guy you want. You don't want Ziegler.
Yeah, and, I mean, let's be honest. All the things we talked about, the fact that he's so good, the fact that everybody wants relief pitching, the Marlins are going to ask for the moon, and if the Cubs do end up trading for him, I think a lot of people are going to be kind of like shocked and surprised at how much it costs. But
yeah,
if you have to give up Miguel Amaya and a couple other really good prospects to get a guy like that, that's a guy who could be, you know, a staple in your bullpen for the next 3 years. And I mean, let's be honest about Morrow. I don't think he's coming back anytime soon. I would be kind of surprised if Morrow pitches for the Cubs before September.
Really? Is that the vibe you're getting?
Yeah, that's definitely the vibe I'm getting after being there and kind of like hearing the other beat writers ask for updates on Morrow. Nobody said that, but I mean,
yeah, he's probably
not picking up a ball to start throwing for another 2 weeks. So,
well, the way it just all happened too. I mean, the Cubs just like were like quietly like, oh yeah, by the way, Brandon Morrow's on the DL, and also by the way, you know, Luke Farrell's on the roster. Let's talk about him. It's just like, what? Yeah. What'd you say?
Right, exactly. Big trade just went down.
Ooh.
Not with the Cubs, but with the Cardinals. I'm gonna let you guess which outfielder the Cardinals just traded.
Ooh, which one they just traded or traded
just,
for?
Just traded right now, one of their outfielders.
Tommy Pham?
Yes, Tommy Pham. Tommy Pham is gone. They traded him to the Tampa Bay Rays.
Oh, that's weird. What are they getting back in return?
I'm trying to figure that out. I like clicked on the thing on my phone and then it didn't say.
Yeah, my tweet deck's blown up right now with tweets. I can't read them fast enough.
the thing was just like, it just says Tommy Pham has been traded to the Rays. Chris Archer is not going back to St. Louis in the deal that's sending Tommy Pham to the Rays. Okay, here it is. Justin Williams, Genesis Cabrera, and Roel Ramirez to the Cardinals for Pham and international slot money. So I don't know much about any of those players.
Nor do I. But good. Hey,
full sell mode.
Yeah, apparently. And also very excited to get Tommy Pham out of the NL Central. He always seems to just be like a very pesky hitter for the Cubs. The Cardinals in general are just that. But yeah, you know, Tommy Pham loves to crush the Cubs. He's turned kind of quietly into like sort of like secondhand Billy Hamilton with the way he's been hitting the Cubs recently. So very excited about that.
Yeah, and something else I learned last year, really just from going and talking to Cardinals beat reporters when I go to games in St. Louis, the Cardinals didn't really care for Tommy Pham in general. Mm-hmm. He was a little more blunt and honest when he spoke to the media than they like. They prefer their players to kind of toss out the cliches and you know, not really give any sort of real insight, and Pham will answer honestly. He got in trouble a couple times last year with the team when, you know, somebody asked him once, like, what, you know, what was wrong with the team, why they weren't competing, and he basically said, "We don't run the bases well, we're not fast, we don't have our power." He's like, he just kind of like laid it all out, and he's just like, there is no one thing that our team, like our offense, does really well. and like the front office like called him in and kind of read him the riot act about it. There was another time where Lance Lynn kind of pulled him aside and was like, "Hey, cut it out." The Cardinals just didn't really care for him. I got the sense last year that he would be traded within a year or so. So not totally surprising, especially with how much he's struggled recently.
Yeah, and I know he was upset with like when Matt Adams got put in the outfield as opposed to him. I know he hasn't been super excited that Dexter Fowler shares right field with him. It's kind of like you could just, like you said, the writing was on the wall there, and Tommy wasn't being very, you know, he was being very candid. He wasn't hiding anything really. So I mean, it's not surprising they moved him. It's just surprising they traded him for essentially nothing. So
yeah, well, I mean, who knows? I don't know what any of those players are. Maybe some of them are good. I don't know.
That's true.
It could just be depth. Yeah, the Cardinals can always use more depth. So last thing I wanted to talk about before we move on to the final segment, because we're kind of, I mean, obviously it's a long podcast because we have a lot of stuff to talk about, but Bryce Harper, you mentioned earlier, you called it a long shot that the Cubs would trade for another starter. And I wanted to move right into this and say, speaking of long shots, Bryce Harper, I don't think he gets dealt at all the deadline.
No.
I feel like there would be a fan revolt in Washington. The Nats are a bad season. I mean, they are, but they're only 5.5 games out here on July 31st. It's not totally out of the realm of possibility that the Phillies and the Braves could be overcome by the Nationals. I mean, if you just look at the rosters, the Nationals have the better roster than any of those teams, in my opinion. But 5.5 games, I don't feel like that's like absurd to say that they could come back from that. So the Nationals are listening on trades on Harper, which is the right thing to do. They obviously should be doing that. It's just that I don't think they're going to get what they would need to move him, like to motivate themselves to move him. They need something good. So no, I just don't think it's going to happen, especially not to the Cubs.
Yeah, well, I mean, and you also like talk about like, I mean, they officially made him available 18 hours before the trade deadline. Like, come on, like they're very clearly trying to see like just like, you know, what type of value they could even get back for Harper, just to kind of appease, you know, whoever it may be that would have been like, well, you know, Nationals need to trade now. And it's like, well, you know, at least they have themselves a cop out where it's like, if he does leave, it's like, well, hey, we tried to trade him, and here's what the offers we were getting for him. They weren't very good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's kind of a safe face moment, but yeah, unless a team just comes in and be like, we're giving you our top five prospects. You know, no, sorry. Bryce Harper finishes out the year in Washington for sure.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. They've been tied to the Cleveland Indians. It just seems like, yeah, it would have to be exactly what you said. The Nats would have to go out there and ask for the moon for this sort of rental for 2 months. I can't remember who said it, but somebody was like, it would basically be like the Machado trade, only a lesser return because it's less amount of time, and Harper's not having the season that Machado is having.
Yeah.
And the fact that Machado can play infield, second base, or not second, shortstop, third base, makes him more valuable than Harper as an outfielder. So the obvious return that he would get for him would be less than what the Orioles got for Machado. And there's just no sense in the Nationals giving up their season for that kind of return.
No. Good news is, though, if he does get traded from the Nationals and the Cubs try and sign him in the offseason, it does mean they don't have to give up a compensatory pick. So, I mean, that's a plus. I also, if I had to pick one team I'd like Bryce Harper to go to that wasn't the Cubs, I think it'd be really cool if he went to Oakland. I just, you know, throwing it out there. That'd be really fun. I don't think Oakland does it. But, you know, they have been known to take rentals. But, yeah, no, he's staying in D.C. And we can, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Do the A's have the next Barry Larkin on their – in their minors to deal?
I don't know. Franklin Barreto seems really good, but yeah, I don't not that level of player.
They don't have the next Barry Larkin. Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll find out something about the Cubs later today. If I If I had to go with my gut, I'd say they don't make a move today, but I think they probably add another reliever at some point in August.
Yeah, I think that's safe to assume. They need to add one, especially if Dunson keeps pitching the way he is. He was a great story last year, not very reliable this year.
No. All right, let's go ahead and go to our final segment and we can wrap up. So the Cubs, Pirates, and Reds were all off on Monday, but the Brewers and Cardinals did both play, and unfortunately they both won. The Brewers beat the Los Angeles Dodgers 5-2, thanks in large part to a 3-run homer by Eric Thames. The Cardinals fell behind at 4-0 after a Nolan Arenado grand slam, and Carlos Martinez had to leave that game with a shoulder strain after seeing his velocity drop off from 97 early in the game to 90 in the fifth inning. They rallied, of course. They won 5-4 on a 10th inning walk-off home run by Marcell Ozuna. So standings heading into play as of today, the Cubs still lead. They are 61-44, a game up on Milwaukee. The Brewers are 62-47, while the Pirates are 55-52, 7 games back. Cardinals are 54-52, 7.5 back, while the Reds are 48-58, 13.5 games back. The Cardinals, they are not that close in the wild card chase, and it does feel like they should at this point believe that they could still catch the Diamondbacks in the wild card, but I think they're making the smart move and selling at the deadline.
Yeah, they haven't been very good. And even in the games where, like, you know, like Matt Carpenter was crushing the baseball, they only won like 5 of those like 10 games or something like that. Their best player was on a massive offensive tear, and they were still struggling.
Right. Yeah.
On top of it, like, what, Carlos Martinez is throwing 90 miles an hour as opposed to 97. Like, what is going on?
Yeah, I didn't see if he officially went to the DL or not, but I would have to think he does if he left with a shoulder strain. He's been injured on and off all season. You mentioned the Carpenter thing. I think every Cubs fan probably cringes because they remember in that 5-game series how much Carpenter just destroyed Cubs pitching. The Cubs took 3 of 5. Yeah. I mean, if your best player is going off like that, just like you said, and you lose 3 of 5 and you're basically 500, yeah, you kind of have to evaluate where you're going with this. And yeah, I think the smart thing for them to do is to sell. Yeah, they traded Pham. That opens up the outfield for Harrison Bader, who is an excellent defensive outfielder. He's kind of very similar in a lot of ways to Aaron Mora, only he has speed. I think that was a smart move for them. Honestly, it kind of bums me out that the Cardinals are making the right move at the deadline. I wanted them to trade prospects for someone like Josh Donaldson, completely waste an opportunity like that.
That would have been my dream scenario too. But hey, you know, what can you do?
Right. All right. I guess that wraps it for this episode of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. That's Sean Sears. I'm Ryan Davis. We both write for NBC Sports Chicago from time to time. I'm also at The Athletic occasionally. I write for Bet Chicago. He writes for Fansided and does the 312 podcast. Did I get everything? Did I nail it?
You did. You nailed it.
Nailed it.